When you first came to Alaska, which was, you came to Skagway with your mother and your brother, 1902.
Mm-hmm. 1902.
But your father, you see, your father had been up here before 1902.
Been up before, I don't know when. First, you know. I mean, I don't know when he was up here the first time. Probably, I would guess, around 99, 1900.
Yeah, when you say here, you mean...
It's out of Skagway and on the Yukon.
Then down into the Dawson area, maybe.
No, he went on down. How you doing?
Very good. For yourself?
That's right. No, he went down to Rampart. He never was in Dawson other than going through.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I was in Rampart this summer, and I was surprised to learn. I'd read it before, but I was surprised to learn that Rampart was a really rambunctious place in 98.
Well, it was, well, 98 on for quite a few years, because it was enough of a community that it was enough of a community that this outfit that he worked for, Ross Higgins, concern, headquartered out of Astoria, Oregon. They had a big store in Skagway, and Skagway then was a flourishing town, probably 6,000 people. Hard to believe now when you go down there to imagine that that little valley could hold that many people. But they conceived the idea of picking out some spot along the Yukon and sending in large quantities of groceries, staples, and distribute from that point. And while I never established a store of their own there, there were storekeepers that did purchase this stuff from them.
That was in the Rampart?
In Rampart. And the way they work it, he'd take generally two scows, probably 40 to 50 tons of staples down, just drift down, float down, two scows together, and sell all of the groceries they had on board, shovels, picks, and what have you, and then sell the scows for lumber, and use those for sluice boxes and what have you. And it made good lumber. It was fresh lumber, just used once downstream. Because there was no possible way of getting a scow back upstream. It just...
Where'd the lumber come from? Did it come from the Lake Bennett area?
No, it was all outside, I imagine, outside lumber.
Over the railroad.
See, the railroad was finished in, about 99, I think.
Yeah, this summer I was talking with Adriana Coyle, who went to Dawson in 1900. She was just a little girl at the time, and she said that they rode the train from Skagway, I think, to Bennett, or somewhere in there, and then they had to take, I think, two boats on the lakes, and then the railroad
picked up over Carcross.
Yeah, and then went on into Whitehorse.
Yeah.
And then I think in 1901, maybe the next year, the railroad was completed through. But she said when they came through in 1900, they made the bad parts of it.
I didn't know what year it was, but I know that there was a period there that construction along the shore of Lake Bennett, that's probably, 30 miles long?
Yeah, well...
It was pretty, pretty tough going.
Yeah, well, after the stampede of 98, I think all the trees around Lake Bennett had been
taken. Just country is denuded. There's nothing but willows left.
Dawson this summer, I got some pictures of El Dorado and Bonanza Creek. You know, they're beautiful trees.
Oh. When were they taken?
I took pictures this summer when I was over there.
Yeah, but I mean...
But this was on the Discovery area in Dawson.
Oh, yeah.
You look at pictures taken in 1898 and 99, the very same spot. There's not a tree in sight. It's just denuded trees. Mm. Absolutely denuded. But now the second growth has come back, and it's really a beautiful valley.
Well, I know my brother and I... And a few other kids used to hike over to Dyea and up the Chilkoot Pass. No, I never was over the Chilkoot Pass, but been up it a long ways. A day's journey from Skagway over and back is about as far as we ever went. But what those people went through in order to get across the pass, and then backtracked in the next year and came up over the White Pass.
Well, from Dyea, where you lived, over to Skagway, there was a wagon road.
Skagway to Dyea.
Yeah, there was a wagon road that you
No, not then.
Not then.
Not then. Just a footpath. The entrance to the. Egress to the town or to the Yukon River to start with was Dyea over the Chilkoot Pass until some adventuresome souls developed the White Pass, and just almost overnight there was a change that the landings were made at several wharves that they built in Skagway. See, Dyea never had a wharf. They just landed out in the mud flats.
And lighter in.
Yeah. And believe me, it was a long, long tide flat. And how they did it is they weren't superhuman men, because they were mostly just out of stores and what have you. They weren't great big 6-foot Paul Bunyans.
And they weren't
educated.
A lot of them weren't. Call these people handle freedom. Longshoremen.
Steve Bars and
they weren't.
Oh, no.
You read the history of that era, or that time. They came from the farms in Nebraska, and from the east, and from Canada, and from the west coast, and Mexico.
And they were shoe clerks. And,
yeah.
You know, men that had never seen a pair of snowshoes, didn't know what rubber boots were for.
So you went into... You went to Skagway with your mother and your brother.
And brother.
In about 1902.
Landed in Skagway, if I remember it, on the 6th of May, 1902.
And your father was already freighting on the Yukon. And then later, to get back to Rampart a little bit, I was really surprised to learn, and I should have known this before if I was as good a historian as I'd like to be, but, you know, it takes time to research all these things, and I didn't know it, but I discovered in Rampart late this summer that the Nook Creek in Rampart was discovered almost simultaneously with the big discovery over in
Well, was that Dahl that made the discovery?
I don't know who made it.
Dahl was in there, and in fact, there's a creek just upstream from Rampart.
No,
Dahl Creek.
I think Minook was named after the discoverer.
Uh-huh.
I think it was, as I recall, it was half-breed Indian and Russian. But I'd have to go back and check that, because I'm not sure then. But what caught my attention was I'd read where El Mayo and McQuesten and Harper and Dew had come to the North Country together through Canada and down the Mackenzie, apparently, and then come over the Porcupine. And they all came in about 1873 or 74, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the name McQuesten and Harper and Ledoux are well known in the Dawson area.
Oh, yeah.
And their fourth partner was Mayo. He stayed downriver.
Mm-hmm.
And I met his daughter and talked to her and interviewed her this summer in Rampart. But he was a trader also. He was down at Old Station in Tanana, and then the Discovery was made in Rampart. He moved up there and he ended his days there. But it was almost a simultaneous discovery, which seems to get lost in our perspective, you know, the gold rush here. Rampart was a mighty big village at one time. They had about 10,000.
Well, there's a lot of those small hamlets that were very, very ambitious, small gold production, about the only gold produced on the Rampart area was Minook and Baker Creek, as far as I know.
Now, but Baker Creek, is that named after your father?
No.
No relation to your
family? No, not I know of. It is, it's unknown to me.
But to get back to you and your mother and brother were in Skagway, your father had been up here, then how did you get to Fairbanks? Did he send for you, or did he come out and get you, or... Did he come to Skagway to get you?
I told you, it was a scoutmaster, I guess you'd call him. He'd go into Whitehorse just as early as they could start building scows, get two scows built, and accumulate all of the stock of groceries that Ross Higgins would send in to him. Get all of that together, get his scows loaded, drift them down to Rampart and sell them. He did that. He did that three different times because he walked out over the ice once from Rampart to Whitehorse. I mean, walked every foot of the way with dog team and so forth. And the other two times he got rid of the gear early enough that he went downstream, came out by the way of St. Michael and Seattle. And then the last year they put on a... And that's why I like to think of him as a pilot on the Yukon. E.R. Peoples, who had a big store in Fairbanks, and also in Skagway, went in competition with Ross Higgins. He built this boat called the Tana, T-A-N-A. And Dad was captain and skipper of it, because there was a dearth of pilots to take ships, scows, rowboats, or anything else through the Yukon Flats. And Dad had enough experience that they entrusted him with this Tana and one or two scows, I don't know. One scow at least, and the freight that the Tana carried, and brought that down to Tanana and then on up to Fairbanks. And then he went in working for E.R. Peoples on shore. He's out of the boating business. And in the winter of 1904, he sent out for me to come in first thing in the spring. He didn't want to spend another winter in Fairbanks alone.
Still in Skagway.
So in 1905, in July, sometime in July, I don't know when, I got here before the 4th of July, because I remember the 4th of July goings-on. For me to come in, spend the year with him, and if the camp proved out then, well, then he figured on bringing the family in, which they did in 1906. But I came up from Chena. I came in alone from Skagway.
You went from Skagway over the White Pass.
Over the White Pass, Whitehorse,
and down the Yukon.
Dawson, down the Yukon to Tanana,
to
Chena. and the railroad is just a little narrow gauge, had just been completed. And I came up on that. They didn't even have passenger cars. They had a flat car with benches on it for the passengers. And I came into Fairbanks. The last hitch from Chena to Fairbanks on the old narrow gauge. And that's the way I got into Fairbanks.
Have you talked to Dick Callahan about, or recently, or you must know Dick Callahan. He's at the Pioneer Home now, he's been all over. But he has lived in this area. He was born up on Chandler Lake.
Yeah.
He calls it Chenoa. Some of the early...
Well, the old Chenoa.
Yeah, the Indians, I guess that was the Indian name, Chenoa.
Well, Chenoa. I don't know. And
Dick today, you know, Uncle Dick, they call him. He lives in the Pioneer Home. He calls it, not Chena, the old town of
Chena.
Chenoa.
No, it was called and mail was addressed as Chenoa.
Chenoa.
C-H-E-N-O-A. In the same way as Skagway. Skagway for years was U-A-Y instead of W-A-Y.
Is that right?
Skagway.
No,
but then enough New Englanders got in here.
Yeah. That grammar teachers.
Yeah.
But you came in July then in 1904, and your father was here.
Yeah, and he was here. He'd been here in 1905. I got here.
Oh, you got here in 5. Then you spent the year.
He and I together, right? I was.
And where did you live?
Over the store, up over the store in ER Peoples, up right where the old Nordale. Section of the old Nordale Hotel. I mean the one that's on Second, the burn. Was the backbone, the nucleus of the Nordale Hotel.
That was the Peoples?
ER Peoples Trading.
Yeah.
Yep.
You lived there lived
there the winter 1905, 1906, and mother and brother came in 1906.
Now, what was your father's first name?
Walter.
Walter.
Yeah. Walter Childs Baker.
Walter Childs Baker. What was your mother's maiden name?
Duffy. Good old Irish Duffy from West Virginia.
Good old Irish Duffy. And her first name?
Evoliano.
Evoliano.
Uh-huh.
Duffy.
Evoliano.
That's where your daughter Evelyn is.
Evelyn comes from. Yeah.
It's not Evelyn, but Evolyn. Well,
I'm positive that if we went to the records, we'd find that she was baptized Evoliano.
Your daughter.
I'd bet on it.
Yeah.
But
it's a peculiar spelling. Most people want to say Evelyn,
Evelyn, mm-hmm.
And hers is
Evolyn.
Lyn.
Evolyn.
There's another person in Fairbanks who, a woman who has a name which is unusual in spelling. That's Pauline Carlo. Perhaps you know the Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
Pauline and Bill Carlo. It's not Pauline. It's Pauline. P-O-L-D-I-N-E.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Her name was. She was named after a nun in Dulato. I won't begin to tell you what the nun's full name was.
Uh-huh.
It's P-O-L-D-I-N-E, Pauline. And the reason I know this is I worked, as you know, I worked for the News Miner for
mm-hmm.
a long time, and I learned that Evelyn's name was E-V-O-L-Y.
And, yeah.
And I learned that Pauline's name was P-O-L-D-I-N-E. This is getting off of you. Then you came in. Probably around the 1st of July in 1905.
It must have been in there somewhere.
Because
I remember the 4th of July.
What happened that 4th of July? Fireworks?
Fireworks, and we had a lot of foot racing and had a grease pole. And in those days, they had a bridge at... It wasn't at the foot of Cushman Street, but it was just barely downstream from where Cushman Street is now. That
Turner Street.
Well, by the it is right in. I don't think it was Turner Street either. It was sort of in between. That they drive piling, put down planking in that, that for a crossing of the river, but that would go out in the wintertime, and or in the spring breakup, and but there was a cable that they had across the river. They had one of these current-driven scows. You've seen, they point them upstream. They go across one way and point them the other way, and they come back again. And there was one of the stunts I remember is you remember Fred Johnson? Mm-hmm. He used to live here. Well, it was his brother that was going to tightrope walk across on this cable, because that stayed up year round. And I don't believe he got 10 feet from shore, and you know, all wobbly there with this big long balancing pole and the cable, and he didn't synchronize, and he fell off in this. And gee, you know, just the coldness of the water is enough to make me still shiver to watch him doing it.
Well, was he a tight rope?
No, heavens, no. He later on drowned.
Is that right?
In the rivers, yeah.
Where did he drown?
It's right close to close by there.
Did he work on the dock?
No, there was I believe, I'm not too sure. I think he was working in the, there was a mill, sawmill over where the Catholic Church is now. Mm-hmm. And it was in the workings of that somewhere, I believe. So I remember it, that he wound up drowning. He drowned.
Your father felt that the camp was going to be stable enough. He said, after you were here for 1 year, then
they were coming in, and up to that time, up to 1904, they always, all the miners, every one of them, the same way in the upper country, believed that the concentrations of pay streaks were always down in the V at the bottom of a valley. And they find out that by prospecting and moving out to the extremes of the pay streak, that a lot of these pay streaks are up in the benches. There was one time you could stand at the head of Bedrock Creek on Clary Summit looking down towards Chattanooga. And it was just a straight line that went from one bench through the creek and up on the other bench. You could almost have laid a ruler on it.
Yeah.
And that was the pay streak. And, you know,
that,
it fooled them.
That was the case over in the Dawson area, too.
Yeah, well, that's right.
When the later people came in, they went up on the sides of the hills, and the old-timers called them greenhorns.
Yeah, that's right. And they struck it really rich.
Way up on the sides.
That Cheechaka Hill, you know, was the result of a smart guy coming into a saloon saying, where can I go to find gold? One of these extra smart old timers said, beside that hill there, anywhere. Some of the richest.
Cheechaka Hill is what I took a picture of this summer. It's just covered with trees again, you know, that
yeah.
Second growth. And when I was there, I was with Mrs. Coyle.
Uh-huh.
In 1900, and it just was denuded. It was just completely shaved.
Yeah.
Foliage. You know, every piece of wood that could be used to burn.
Well, it's hard to imagine a country that that supported as many people as the Klondike did, and the only fuel resource they had was wood, were trees, and they had to be trees that were dry. And imagine a country as far north as that prospecting, as they were luckier to find a cord of wood and they were a pound of gold. One's about as valuable as the other, too.
Let's get back to your Your life here in Fairbanks, your mother, your brother Dorman.
Dorman.
You didn't have any sisters?
No.
Or any other brothers?
Had a half-sister later on.
So you had your one brother Dorman. Then you remained here in Fairbanks and went to school here?
I left here in 1910.
1910. And you were born in
1893.
So you left here when you were what, 14 years?
No,
17. No, 17.
I went outside and worked as I was on my own then, and my mother had, of course, she lost Dad in 1907, and she married Roy Ferguson in the winter of 1910. I don't know, January, February. I was working with the NC company in the machine shop, and the summer of 1910, I'd saved $40, had two $40 gold pieces, and a pass from the NC company from Fairbanks to Seattle. Didn't cost me anything out, so I was on my own.
So you left here, did you have a destination, or did you just want to leave home and see some new territory?
Just seeing new territory. Wound up in the Army chasing old Pancho Villa up and down the Mexican border.
Pancho Villa?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
How'd you get in the Army?
Well, probably broke. Wanted to see the world.
Yeah. Where did you join the Army?
Seattle.
And then how did you get down?
I went in the Signal Corps. Joined the Signal Corps, and they needed this fracas had broken out on the border of old Pancho Villa, and they were badly in need of communication troops. I didn't know anything about communications, of course. What they wanted were live bodies down there, and so they shipped, 700-800 of us all together down that were on the border there.
In California
and Arizona. In fact, got over into New Mexico, as far as Columbus, New Mexico.
Well, were you stationed at certain places?
No, we're on there. We were pretty mobile. We weren't stationed there. We were under canvas all the time.
I see.
And just on, and it was
and
mounted.
What year was this?
It had been 1912. Because at the, I was in, we were back from the border and reassigned to Hawaiian Islands, to Pearl Harbor, Fort Shafter rather, and I got back from there just before Christmas. I paid off in San Francisco, about 3 days before Christmas.
Of 1912. So you were in Hawaii in 1912?
Yeah.
You covered a lot of territory. Well, let's get back to Pancho Villa. The signal, you were in the Signal Corps.
I was in the Signal Corps.
But they had other, cavalry and other, or was it just, who was chasing Pancho Villa?
Well, what we were doing, as word came in that Pancho Villa was operating in a certain area, we'd set up signal stations. Mind you, in those days you didn't have the wireless was the skimpiest thing in the world. They didn't even have tubes in their sets. It was all make and break, and battery operated, So the way we did was most of our wire was we would lay wire by hand and cart where there wasn't wire, but ordinarily most of the time. We used the barbed wire fences of the farmers. We would tie into the second from the top, next to the top wire. For some reason or other, that was used by the farmers for their hand-ringing telephone systems. So we'd tie in on the second wire, and believe me, we used to catch hell from the farmers and their wives coming on there with our Morse code,
yeah.
And they were trying to talk, and I wondered what for a few weeks, wondering what is going on. But when they got wise to it, why, they were agreeable. When come to a fence, why, you'd go up and over. And they were always very careful to close all the gates, the farmers themselves. And the second wire from the top went up and over and continued right on.
Mm-hmm. So that was their communication line as well.
That was their intercom.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you spent how long, about a year on that detail?
Just about.
Did you ever catch up with Pancho Villa?
No. Every time we'd think we were right on his trail, why, we'd find out that he was up in Los Angeles in the nightclubs whooping it up.
Whatever happened to Pancho Villa? Somebody caught up with him.
Darn fine, no, what his final reward was.
That'll give me something to look up here when you get back from Hawaii, this trip we can get together and I can...
Yeah.
Cause what happened to Pancho?
He was a regular Robin Hood, you know.
Yeah.
He'd rob the poor and use what he wanted for himself, or the rich, and use what he needed for his own amusements. If anything left, why, he'd give it to the poor.